Okay, let's start with a terrible joke. A termite walks into a bar and says, "Is the bartender here? Is the bartender here?" Wah, wah, wah. Okay, and it gets worse from there. Okay, all right, so I added a little bit of text and commentary to the live coding notes I did from last time. And I think Mohammed either gave you a link to them already, or I will at the end of the day. I'm going to add to the end of those, and then do the same thing, decorate with them with some more text and stuff. So you'll at least have a bit of notes about what I talked about today. Good morning. Okay, so just as and yeah, okay. So just as a reminder, we were looking at fitting an example data set and a simple just linear model, because we thought, it's just an illustrative example to get started. And then I took a bit of a diversion and showed you the Julia kind of built-in optimizer, or minimizer. So the idea there was we could give it a general function and it can sort of find the, poke around and find the minimum of your function. So now I'm going to try to jam those two things together. So for the fitting a data set, I talked a little bit about how basically we're using a model to make for each x value a prediction of what the real y value is. And then we have a measurement of the y value at that x value. And there's a likelihood of drawing that data value if that was the real y value, right? And then basically fitting is a matter of moving around that prediction so that it sort of best matches all of the observations. So we can write that down as a likelihood function. And sorry, I should scroll to something useful. And basically when we come up with a good model fit, it'll sort of thread through all of the data points, ideally, in a way where you can look at it and say, oh yeah, that sort of is consistent with the size of the error bars. And then you could imagine you can shift it up. There's sort of a little region around where you could shift it up and down and you would say, yeah, that's a reasonable fit, right? So there's some sort of flexibility in what you would consider a reasonable model fit to this. If I had a model fit that was like this, you would say, sorry, I guess I'm looking at the shadow cast by the stick on the, does that work for you? Yes. Yeah, so if I had my fit down like there, you'd be like, well, it's low on all of the data points, right? It should be sort of threading through at least some of them. And if it was sort of that, you'd be like, well, it's sort of totally missing that one and totally missing the one on the left. You have an intuitive idea of that there's sort of a range of values that would fit. And the likelihood function will let us make that quantifiable. Okay, so let's see. So let me just, I'll just talk about this one more time. So this was looking at, I was trying to write down again, this is sort of what I'd written on the board before. I was writing down the likelihood for a single y observation for an x value. And what we were doing was making a prediction for the y value. So we were just using a simple linear model. So we have parameters b and m for our model. And we're going to try to fit those values, like the b and the m's. And the probability is this whole Gaussian function, right? So it's just we have a y predicted minus y observed squared over 2 times the variance. And now we also assumed that, and that's called the likelihood. And we also assumed that all of our data points were independent. So if we have a whole collection of data points, then we can just write down the likelihood for that whole set of y values, given the whole set of x values, as this product of these Gaussian values. So it's kind of the notation in all of this stuff is like a little bit weird, but like in all of the probability like statistics, it's weird because it's written as though it's a function of y given x. But we're actually just fitting the b and m values, like we're fitting the parameter values and holding those x and y's fixed. So it's sort of I guess you could implicitly think of it as being also given y given x and b and m. But usually it's not written that way. And that's sort of just lazy notation. Okay, so let's see, then we looked at the optimizer and how you often have to write these little, so what did I write? Oh yeah, I wrote, like I had a little function, the sync function, it turns out. And when we were using the optimizer, we found that we often had to write these little like adapter functions because the optimizer wants your function to have some interface and your function actually has some other interface. So you end up writing these little adapter functions like to convert like vectors to scalars or things like that. And Julia lets you write those little adapter functions in a bit of a more compact way. Like you can write these anonymous functions where you have like a where the syntax is like you have the inputs and then an arrow and then the outputs. And then I think a thing I didn't, I think that's where we ran out of time at the end of yesterday or last Tuesday. And so I think you haven't seen this before. So you can also write multi-line anonymous functions. At a certain point, you're like, I should just make this a normal function, but like sometimes, you know, there's a little range in there where you're like, oh yeah, it still makes sense for this to be like a cute little anonymous function. So here's, this is sort of a weird looking thing where, again, Julian doesn't care about the white space. Like it doesn't care about the indentation and everything. That's just to communicate to yourself when you're reading it later or someone else who's marking your code or whatever. But basically here we're making this anonymous function where the input is xi, and then it goes into this begin end block. And what I'm doing here is what I wanted to do was say, I want to just write down all of the values that the optimizer calls my function with. So like I just want to remember. Because you know, the optimizer is going to poke around in your function looking for the minimum. And I wanted to write down all of the values that it tries. So I made this variable called all xvals. And basically every time this anonymous function gets called, I'm going to append the value it's trying to this all xvals. And then since I didn't write, so, and then at the last statement in that begin end block is this like sum of my function thing as we normally had. So like the last value in that begin end block is like the return value from that block. Okay, so what this does is calls the optimizer like before and returns the optimum, but it also saves all of the values, like all of the times the optimizer called our function with different values. And you can see like we started it out at, I started it out at 1, and then it tried like 1, 1.525, 2, it tried 3 point, like it sort of poked around in the function to look for that minimum value. And you can see it sort of like went up to like 4, 7, 6, 5, 4, and then it sort of narrowed in on like do 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 sort of like narrowed in down onto the bottom. And I can plot those values here. And you can, so that just is showing you like, that's maybe a little bit hard to see the red curve on here, but it's sort of like jumped around and then sort of rolled down into the bottom. Okay. Okay, sorry, that was kind of a long review, but I wanted to get back into the context of where we were. Okay, so let's finally merge these two worlds. Let's write down the likelihood function as something that we can optimize. Okay, so I don't know how to, I should get you to help me here or something. Okay. I'm going to make it, there's always like some choices about how you make your function interface, but I'm going to make it take just a list of, or like a vector of parameters, and then x values, y values, and sigma y values. okay, and then if you, so we're going to assume we're getting two parameters. So you can do this thing called unpacking them like this. This is, you can do this in Python too, like where you say basically, I know this params is a two element vector and I want to kind of unpack it into these local variables called B and M. And then, I want to come up with this Y prediction. So these are going to be predicted values for y given the x values we've got. So this is b plus m times x. And then, okay, I'm going to compute this. Yeah, okay. This is pretty common to see the I'm going to call this chi for the predicted minus the measured over the over the standard deviation. That thing, that value comes up all the time. And then, okay, so the likelihood is 1 over, anybody can shout it out if they remember. There's a square root of 2 times pi. There's a sigma y in there. There's an exponential of minus chi squared, right? Minus half chi squared. And then that's for each value. And then I'm going to return the product of those likelihoods for the individual data points. Okay, I think that will, so let's try that likelihood. What did we think? The offset was about 50 and the slope was about 2. And then I'm gonna pass in data.x, data.y, and data.sigma y. I think that's not gonna work. Yeah, okay. Anybody see what I did wrong? So it's saying you can't add a float to a vector of floats, basically, is what it's saying. Where exactly is that happening? There's a little, it's harder to see what's happening in a notebook than if you write it in a text. But basically it's saying on line 3 of my thing, it's doing something, I'm doing something wrong. So I think it's in that Y prediction line. And it's because it ends up being that for, if you want to, you need to do the dot, like dot times, to do things element by element. I would have thought that Julia could be smart enough to figure that out, but apparently we have to handhold it and tell it exactly what we want. Was it complaining about the plus before? I don't know if it was complaining about the plus or the times, but either way, we have to do both of them. It's probably still not gonna work. Wow, how did that?
Surprisingly.
Okay, yeah, I'm surprised. Okay, maybe everything else was.
Yeah, some missing practices on likelihoods.
Oh, am I missing something? What am I missing?
The closing practices from the left. Yeah, so the practices on sigma y, so it needs to be close, I guess, on the other side. Or not, yeah.
Where on this?
Yeah, I think it's got some.
That one's, okay, the square root there, and this is bracketing the 1 over.
Okay.
And then there's the exponential. So I think it's, okay, I think that's actually right. Okay, I'm just surprised. I thought I was going to have to put in a lot more dots everywhere. Like, why didn't I have to do a dot minus there? Because those are vectors and vectors, I guess. So, but, Okay, well, I don't know. I'm pleasantly surprised. I thought I would have to do more. Maybe, I guess, because if you're operating all on vectors, then it's fine. It's just if you're mixing scalars and vectors. Okay, good. That makes sense. Okay, so one thing to note here is that it's giving us an answer that's like 9 times 10 to the minus 51, right? Because the Gaussian drops off really fast. Right? So if you're only like a few sigma out in the tails, then the likelihood for that data point is like, 10 to the minus 6 or something. So then when you multiply like 20 data points together, you get like 10 to the minus 6, like to the 20th power or something, and you can get these tiny, tiny, tiny values. And it turns out that, so let's try plugging this into the optimizer. So let's optimize. Okay, so I might just want to try optimizing the likelihood. Again, we have to give it a starting point. I think that's not going to work. Yeah, because we have to write this little adapter function again, right? So the optimizer is going to pass in parameter values, p, and we want to pass that p, and then data.x, data.y, data.sigma y. Okay, so so that's interesting. So it says it completed successfully. And only called our function 4 times, which is interesting. That seems almost too good to be true. It turns out it is too good to be true. let's have a look at, let's see, what's the best way to do this? Here, I'll save that. And I'm going to just make this into a little multi-line. Whatchamacallit, multi-line anonymous function. So I'm gonna do that. I'm also gonna, begin, and I'm just gonna print. It's not print, it's print ln for print line, I guess. I'm just gonna print out the parameter values and also the, I'm gonna compute the likelihood and then print out the parameter values and the likelihood and return the likelihood. Okay, so it tries a couple of values here, getting results that are like 10 to the minus 51, 10 to the minus 51, 10 to the minus 160, 10 to the minus 83. And then basically, I think it at that point says, eh, good enough. Those are tiny values. It's not changing very much. I'm probably there. So even though it reports success, it is lying to you. So, you know, it is unfortunately not a magical black box that we can always trust. It pays to, let's plot the results and see if if we can see what the results actually look like. I'm copying and pasting the plotting our data points because I can't remember what that looks like. Okay, so I think what I want to do is just, I'll just plot the final result. Okay, so it's B opt and M opt. And remember, we have to get the results by doing this minimizer of the result from the optimizer. Okay, and then do I have an X grid? Yes, but it's not right. Okay, oops. And then what values do I want to plot? I want to go from like lin range, like, what was it, 50 to 300 or something with 50 data points. Okay, and then lines with X grid. Okay, and then I'm doing my B opt plus M opt times X grid. Okay. That didn't work. I need dots on my things. Okay, so there's the results it gives us. Like, thanks for nothing, optimizer. Terrible result. Okay, so this is actually a pretty common problem when you are working in probability spaces because of this problem that, you know, you tend to have a lot of data points and then the values are always less than one, so it tends to push you down to tiny values. And the typical solution is to, instead of working in probability space, to work in log probability space. Because then you just, it's more reasonable values. And you know, the optimizer doesn't care that you're working in log space rather than linear space. Okay, so, actually, you know, I didn't try this before. I'm not sure if this is going to work, but what if we just go like that and take the log of the result? It is possible that will work. I should have tested that before. Okay, so that, okay, yeah, okay, no, that's interesting. So here's now the values it's trying again. So now it's, instead of, you know, 10 to the minus 80, it's giving like log values of minus 15, minus 117. But then it ends up going to minus infinities. And then basically when you hit minus infinities, bad things will happen.
Do we want to maximize the length
of the Yes, good question. Right, because we were... Right, yeah, exactly. Because the optimizer wants to find the minimum and we want to maximize the likelihood. Okay, you know, that is true. Good catch. Okay, so let's try it with, okay, so that means we wanted to return minus likelihood, right? To have them, yeah, okay, so good, that still fails. And does it return the same value? I didn't notice. Oh, interesting. It 62 minus 20, is that right? Okay, that's interesting. It's actual, like, the bad result it gave me back doesn't look so bad now, actually. Okay, I guess. And I did save it, right? Yeah, okay. Okay, but it's still turns out that that is not, it looks reasonable, but it's actually still not the optimum. And it is because, again, still the optimizer is finding like very little change in the values, and it's decided that like that's below the amount that you could, the change is below the amount you could possibly care about. It's close enough. So working in log space is really the way around this. And so what we will end up doing basically is, instead of writing a likelihood function, we'll write a log likelihood function directly. So let me copy and paste that. And then instead of, and then we'll just modify it in place. So log likelihood, parameters are the same. The predicted y's are the same. The chi is the same. So now let's take the log likelihood. So one thing to notice is that in all of this optimizing, the sigma y's aren't actually changing. So we don't really actually need to include them in our result. We're just going to feed this into the optimizer, and it doesn't really care if you add a constant offset. So for my own convenience, I'm basically just going to omit that term, and then the log of this becomes easy enough that even I can do it. So we end up just having to compute this. And that's the individual, that's a vector, right, of the, and then the product becomes a sum because we're working in log space. And there we are. Okay, so now let's have log likelihood, pure data, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And, oh yeah, and as Mohammed noted, we want to be maximizing that log likelihood, so we're going to feed the minimizer the negative of it. And now, whoop, nope. Okay, what did I do wrong? Okay, oh, got an extra paren there. Okay, so here we go. Now, now the optimizer is calling our function a bunch of times. It's got pretty reasonable values. It's poking around. You can see it sort of narrowing in on our likely point in parameter space. Oh, interesting. What's it doing? Why is it going to big negative values? That's not good. That's not right. What mistake did I make? It's going off the rails. Okay, what, like, look, it went to 10 to the 30, and then it's coming back down into like the, oh no, those are 10 to the 37. Okay, so wait. This is the perils of live coding. Okay, what did I do wrong?
I guess it's because it's not bugged from below, log-like.
Find the maximum log likelihood. So we do want the so we want to feed the optimizer the negative of it. Did I make a mistake in this? Okay, I've got chi squareds. I have a question. What are the log likelihoods? Oops. This was not planned. okay. That is not what I. Okay. What did I do wrong? So weird, and it's going off the rails. I'm printing log-like, and then I'm returning negative log-like. Should be looking for, we should be look, finding it looking, finding higher and higher log likelihoods. Why? Sorry, I'm confused. Got myself confused here. Okay. Log likelihood function. We've giving the parameters x, y, sigma, y's. We're unpacking the params, y prediction b and x, predicted minus y over sigma y, chi squareds, negative a half is right, and then the sum of those things. And then this optimized function is calling that log likelihood with the p and our data. Sorry, I'm super confused here. What if I just return log likelihood, negative log likelihood? Am I doing something wrong with the multi-line anonymous function? Okay, I'm gonna do something I shouldn't, but I'm gonna look at my cheat sheet of what I did earlier. So I'm just lost, and this is not a good use of our time to watch me being lost. Okay. Likelihood minus chi squared. Okay, log likelihood. before I was writing it with all of the yeah, look what I like. I really don't see it. This is what I had before. But so when I was writing it, when I was playing around preparing this, I did it all with the dots, which I thought was necessary at the time. And that does seem to work. And I'm returning, I'm doing the same thing, calling a little anonymous function, getting the log likelihood, and then returning minus L. I have a question. I'm wondering whether, oh no, so I was, okay, yeah, so there's this other little thing called show where Julia will just print out the value of a thing, of a variable. Wait a second, why are there so many? Okay, so this is weird. I printed out the log likelihoods, but then look at how many there are. There's like a whole whack of them. And then there's a semicolon and then a bunch more. So I think something weird has happened. I think that I do need some dots in these vector calculations because I think something weird is happening to the shape of things. Okay, was unexpected. Okay, so I want to show size of y pred, the y prediction, and show the size of chi, and show this, I think size is the name of the function I want. Okay, yeah, so look at that. So my predicted y is a vector of 16, and then my chi has become a matrix of 16 by 16. I don't honestly really understand why. Chi is 16 by 16, so I think it must be that this divide.
I think there might be
the
dots
in
the minus.
Yeah, like I think the solution is to do dots everywhere where we're doing operations. But I'm pretty confused about why. Okay, so then let's dig. So y pred minus y, what is the shape of that? 16 by 16. Oh, sorry, that's just 16. So it's the divide that is doing something weird. So a vector just straight up divided by another vector gives you a matrix. That doesn't make any sense at all to me. Anyway, Julia sometimes is surprising. Okay, anyway, so I think you'll find that it's probably good practice to have a lot of dots and dot operations in your code if you're doing things on vectors. So, okay, now it's failing on no method matching power for a vector and an int. So that's this. So that comes like that. Okay. All right, good. So then all of our sizes make sense again. And okay, sorry. Okay, so now the optimizer is finally like doing a more reasonable, narrowing in on more reasonable values and sort of converging to something that looks reasonable. Okay, that unplanned diversion was kind of, I don't know if that was instructive for you, but yeah, I guess beware Julia being too smart for you and beware the sizes of things. Okay, where's the printing coming? It's still printing a lot of stuff. Okay. All right, so finally, and then I'm gonna delete that again. Okay, so finally we've got our optimum that maybe we believe. And then I'll plot that again against our data. Oh, I did that already. That's fine. Okay. There, that looks pretty good. Looks very similar to the previous one, so I'm suspicious that I messed something up in plotting the previous one. Okay, so this is good. And we have 15 minutes, perfect. So in a, let's look at a couple of things. In addition to a best fit, we'd also like to have uncertainties on those values. You know, if you're writing a scientific paper that reports on how much dark energy there is in the universe, you want to give not only an estimate, but an uncertainty on that value. So let's look at how to do that. And I wanted to show you a couple of ways of visualizing what that probability space looks like. okay, so what I'd like to do is plot a grid, like compute a grid of our model parameters, so B values and M values, and then show what the log likelihood value is for each of those values. So basically, like if you shift it down or change the slope, that will make the fit worse. And then we'll ask how much worse does it get as you change those parameters in different ways. And I'm going to do that just by like computing a grid of B's and M's and just computing the log likelihood for each of them. And then we'll show that as like a heat map or like an image. That make sense? Okay, so I'm just going to do the grid, let's make it, I don't know, 30 by 40. Lin range, B's, those are offsets. The best fit was 30. Let's go from like 0 to 100 with NB steps. The best fit slope is 2.2 something, so let's go from, I don't know, 1.5 to 2.5, no, 3.5 with NMs. And then if we want to make a initialize a matrix, we can go like this and use the zeros function, like makes a empty matrix or a matrix with zeros in it. And then To fill that in, I'm just gonna go like, I'm gonna do some for loops. And like, if you're used to writing Python, this looks terrible to you. Because in Python, for loops are not really very fast. But in Julia, they are. So this is actually like standard practice in Julia. You just write out the for loops and the compiler will write good code. Okay, so for each of these values, I'm going to call log likelihood function, packing up those parameters, data.x, data.y, data.sigmaY. And I'm going to pass in B grid value I and M grid value j. There are better, faster ways to write, or better ways to write that, but this is pretty clear, I hope. Okay, so, and then I'm referring to my cheat sheet. I can plot those as a heat map by going B grid, M grid, and LL grid. And that should do this. I should label, I wonder if I can label my axes here. Nope. Can I go, is x label a function? Ah, x label, nope. X label, exclamation point. Okay, I obviously don't know what I'm doing. Okay, anyway, I'm gonna live with no axis labels. And then let me do a color bar with this magic heat map thing. Nope. I guess I gotta return the fig or else it doesn't plot the figure. Sorry. Full screen. Okay, so so this is saying for, if we plug in different values for these two parameters, the offset and the slope, the B and M, the log likelihoods change like this. So the yellow values sort of here around our peak are like close to zero. And then they get the log, you know, these are log likelihoods. So they're like -1,000, -1,500. Those are basically like very far, you know, the probabilities are e to the -1,500, right? So the probabilities are like very, very, very low out there. So that's probably more range than we really need to look at. You can set the color range to like a low and high value. Let's look at just what the maximum value in that log likelihood grid is. It's like -9. So what if we set the color range to like -25 and -9. And that should give us like a more, this sort of ellipse here. So this is basically showing us that, you know, if we, that there's a lot of covariance between these two parameters. Like if we change the B by a bit, the best fitting M is going to change, you know, they're not independent. And that sort of makes sense, like, because they're, if you look at where our data are, we're offset from zero. So it's sort of like, you know, if you increase the overall offset, you sort of have to pull it down, the slope down to compensate. So that tells you basically that there's a lot of covariance between the parameters we've chosen for this model. Okay, good, time's good. If we have a grid like that, we can also plot contours. Let's see, I'm grabbing my plotting snippet again. So now my axes are B and M, and I can plot a contour of B grid, M grid, and log likelihood grid. And that gives us this, which is kind of weird looking. It's automatically chosen what levels to use for the contours, but you can tell it what levels you want to use. You can either say find 20 contour levels, or you can tell it numerical values for the contours. So if I go like minus 15, minus 25, minus 35, then we should get something that sort of encircles that like peak value that sort of looks like where the ellipse is in this one. Oh, and interesting, I guess it's zoomed the M values a bit. Okay, all that is, and then I guess we could also plot on top of here the optimal values we got from the peak values we got from the optimizer, and as you would hope, it's right in the middle of that contour. Okay, perfect. So this is telling us that those parameters are correlated, the results are correlated. Let's also look at how to get an error estimate on how tightly constrained we think those M's and B's are that we could reasonably report. We could do that by looking at the log likelihoods directly. Or another really versatile way is called the jackknife. And it's this kind of bizarre little method where you take your data set and repeat your analysis a bunch of times. Each time you leave out one data point, repeat the analysis, compute the optimum, and then based on the scatter of the results, you can come up with an estimate for the scatter in the, like the uncertainty in the parameter estimates. So it's this funny little, and it works in some, it gives you correct answers in some Gaussian approximation limit sort of things, but it's like a really versatile method. So basically what we want to do is repeat our analysis, leaving out one data point each time. So I'm going to start by computing n, which is the length of our data vector. And then for each data point, I need to make like a copy of our data vector, but leaving out one data point. So I'm going to go x copy is, I think it's copy. Let me run that, see if that, okay, it doesn't complain. Hopefully it's, nope. Mashed the wrong key. Okay, y copy and sigma copy. And then I need to remove one element from each of those vectors. Julie has this function called delete at, which just says where you give it a vector and an index, and it'll just delete that element from the vector and then keep the rest the same. So I can delete one element from each of those x, y, and sigmas. And then I'm going to repeat the whole like optimizer call wherever I put that for that left out, so, like that data vector with one element left out. Okay, so I'm going to call minus log likelihood, and then instead of data.x, it's going to be x copy, y copy, and sigma copy. And then let's get the results. Optim.minimizer opt. And then I need to save them somewhere. So all right, let's just print them out for now. Show. OK, so I have about 15, I guess 16 data points. So basically leaving out, so if we repeat this whole analysis each time, we get this variety of best fit B values and a variety of best fit M values. Let's compute some, let's save them, and then we'll compute some stats on them. And these are jackknife samples, so I'm just going to call them jack, and they're vectors of length m, n rather. Okay, good. And if we, okay, yeah, let's plot each of those on against the data. I do want to plot the error bars. Oops. Keep the data. Plot new x grid. I want b jack I, m jack I. Okay, there we go. Let's, oop, nope. What did I do wrong? I need my end. Okay, so these are the fits if we leave out each data point in turn. And so that seems reasonable. But if we want to get an actual error estimate from those jackknife samples, it turns out that they're those, as you might guess, like these values are all very correlated because they're basically the same data. They're almost all the same data. So if you want an estimate for the actual variance, it needs to get like blown up by a bit. So specifically, whoops, sorry. I keep hitting escape to exit full screen. So the variance of the, if you were just computing the normal variance of a sample, you would have 1 over the sum of the squared values over the number of samples. But for the jackknife, they're highly correlated. So it turns out that what you do is this. You have n minus 1 over n, and then the sum of the jackknife samples difference from the optimum. And similarly, whoops, no, yeah. Sorry. Have clumsy fingers this morning. And I'm sorry, I'm over time. I'm just gonna write the the M and the covariance. They're just what you'd expect. B jack minus B optimum times M jack minus M optimum. Okay, so that'll give us this will give us error estimates using the jackknife method for our best fit values on M and B and the covariance between them. Oh yeah, you might see the covariance is negative, as we'd expect. We saw that they were anti-correlated. Okay, and then I'll get you to do like the next steps on this in the tutorial on Friday. I will not be there. So I'm going with my family for a ski day. So we're gonna be freezing our butts off in Collingwood. But hopefully having some fun too. Okay, thanks.